good morning to anyone who might be listening to this directly after publishing. It might sound weird because typically I say tonight we're going to talk about, but this morning we are going to talk about Casey Woody. I've been awake since 4 a.m. and I had a window of time where everything in my home is now asleep, with the exception of the cat, who is at present time demolishing the Christmas tree, but I don't care. So if you hear any jingles, that's what it is. But we need to get this story out, so we're gonna power through. Before I do begin, though, I just wanted to take a moment and from the bottom of my heart thank a patron, Ashteen Stevens. And Ashteen, I'm so sorry. I did send an email to make sure that I pronounced your name correctly. So if I have mispronounced it, I'm so sorry. And hopefully you wanted your full name to be used. If that's a problem, let me know and we can edit this. But Ashteen has generously donated so that a percentage of her donation can go to Project Cold Case and the rest can help this podcast not sound like garbage, because ironically enough, I am back to recording on my phone. Believe it or not, it sounds better than the mic that I have and the computer, and I can't get the company to work with me, so this is where we're at for the time being. And I just had to adjust this phone, so if you heard any crackles, it's because I'm moving it. Enough about that. So, Ashteen, thank you. You are the freaking bee's knees. But Casey Woody was a 13-year-old girl from Arkansas, and this is kind of a story that is a lot of the times presented to young kids and teenagers about the dangers of the internet. But I think that us adults also can just keep this in the back of our minds, you know, that people aren't always what they say they are. I know we know that, but I think that it's easy to forget because our lives are so connected to everything now online. It's easy to kind of forget and we can get a little trusting. So in December of 2002, 13-year-old Casey Woody could frequently be found sitting in her family's home just outside of Holland, Arkansas, on her computer, instant messaging with her friends. The Woody home was located in a pretty rural area, and as of the 2010 census, the population was, I believe, 557, and phone calls had to be made long distance. If anyone remembers landlines, that adds up pretty quickly. So instead of calling, she would use the wonders of instant messaging to communicate with all of her friends. The internet was still relatively new to the average home at this time, and I don't think that there were as many worries as there are today, which sadly, as we know, exists now because evil people just had another tool at their disposal in the internet. Casey spent a lot of time alone because, as I said, they lived so far out, her friends couldn't just, you know, hop on their bikes and pop by. On a street view map, the road looks like one of those one-car lanes that you would be terrified to drive on at night because it's just pitch black if you had a wild imagination. Casey's father, Rick, was a Greenbrier police officer, and Greenbrier was a town about 12 miles west of Holland, and he often worked swing shifts. Casey's older brother, Tim, was 19, and he most usually kept an eye on her. He still lived at home and was attending college. A friend of Tim's, who was also 19, named Eric, was temporarily staying in the Woody home, and Casey had an aunt, it was her mother's older sister, who lived on the same road. So all in all, she typically had someone to turn to should she need anything while her dad was on duty. Casey's mother passed away in 1997 on the way home from a baseball game. Two horses ran out into the roadway, and one made contact with the family's car, smashing the windshield on the passenger side of the vehicle. It was said that because of this accident, Casey had a strong hatred of horses, but her mother had loved them and had even owned several horses with her mother, so Casey kept her mom's horse figurines on a shelf in her bedroom. With her mother gone and her father policing, Casey was very responsible for her age, and she frequently made her own meals, did her own laundry, and she always made sure that she had her schoolwork completed without having to be asked. In other ways, though, Casey was your typical 13-year-old girl. She loved to talk boys and make up with her friends. She was a saxophone player, and she had been crowned the 7th grade queen at Greenbrier's annual fall festival in October of 2002. She had spent weekends with her grandmother eating pizza and Chinese food and playing outside. She loved riding on the back of her dad's motorcycle, and she also enjoyed sleepovers with her friends. And it was during one of these sleepovers at Casey's house that the girls decided to enter a Christian teen chat room. There they struck up a conversation with 17-year-old Dave Fagan from California. Dave and Casey hit it off, and they began chatting regularly, which quickly evolved into chats over the phone. Casey's friends, Sam and Jessica, also spoke with Dave over the phone, and a couple of times Casey set up a three-way phone call with Dave and Sam because Sam really wasn't super fond of the idea of Casey's internet friends and all of the personal information that Casey so freely shared. During these calls, Sam noted that Dave would say things like righteous or groovy, and he just didn't talk like a teenager in 2002, but Casey chalked it up to his being from California and being a little bit older. And while they were spending the night at Casey's on another occasion, Jessica spoke to Dave on the phone because she wasn't feeling very well, and Casey had been on the phone with him, and so Casey handed the phone to Jessica and said, "Here, you know, talk to him, he'll make you feel better." During this conversation, Casey and Jessica start hearing noises outside of Casey's house, and it's, you know, pitch black outside, like I said, and they are freaking out, understandably, as 12 and 13-year-old girls. So they shove a dresser in front of Casey's bedroom door, and they're still on the phone with Dave. And Casey tells Dave that she's afraid someone is inside the house because they swear they heard this floorboard in the kitchen creaking. And it was known to do that because it was, one spot was kind of rickety and it would give under pressure. I believe in a documentary that I watched, an episode on the ID channel, it was, if anything, was over 100 pounds. So if Casey's father or older brothers were walking on this certain spot in the kitchen, it would creak. So they're freaking out because this kitchen floor is creaking after they hear stuff outside, and they're telling Dave, like, "I think someone's in the house." And he's like, no, you know, you're just imagining things. Nobody's in your house." And then the noises stop. In May of 2002, Casey met Scott, a 14-year-old boy from Georgia, in the chat room that she now frequented. Scott was introduced into the circle of Casey's real-life and internet friends, and they would all chat, you know, sharing mundane details about their lives with their California friend. But when Dave told Casey that his own aunt was in a coma in Arkansas and he would be coming to visit her, Casey began to open up and confided in him about her own mother's death, which is something that she tended to keep very private. She really didn't even discuss that with her closest friends. After a brief relationship with a local boy, Casey and Scott became an official Yahoo Messenger and long-distance phone call couple on October 3rd, 2002. Casey was still chatting regularly with Dave, who she kind of considered her boyfriend previously, but she ultimately chose Scott. There was no bad blood between the two boys, and Dave even called Scott on the phone a few times to chat. One time, Scott's mom answered the call and asked Scott who was calling from California because she thought maybe it was a salesman. Scott explained that it was a friend of a friend, and the next time that Dave called, Scott's dad intercepted the call and immediately told Dave not to call because he wasn't a kid. Dave was now turning 18, and when Rick found out the age of the boy from California calling his home to speak with his daughter, he forbid Casey from communicating with Dave any longer. On December 3rd, Casey was at school in the middle of a fight with Sam. Casey had given Scott her address so that he could mail her a picture of himself, and Sam was still pretty wary of her friend's online activity and was even more concerned that Casey was now giving someone her home address. Casey's feathers were already ruffled because Sam had told her that she couldn't be in love with someone on the internet, so things came to a head whenever Casey thought Sam called Scott fat after seeing the picture that he had mailed her and she hung in her locker. Sam apparently said he was hot, but it was too late and the middle school feud was on. The pair ended up in the counselor's office after Sam expressed her concern with Casey's internet habits, and they quickly worked out their issues, but Sam had already confided in the counselor about Casey giving out her phone number online. The counselor spoke with Casey privately, warning her about the dangers of the internet and people pretending to be what they aren't. Casey, who was considered a mature model student, assured the counselor that she only gave her phone number to people that her dad had pre-approved. This, of course, was a 13-year-old lie, because Casey was in fact still communicating with Dave and talking to him on the phone frequently. By the end of the school day, all was well within the friend group, and the only unusual event being Casey asked Sam, then Jessica, and then another friend if she could sleep over that night. All three had said no because it was a school night and they knew their parents wouldn't allow it, but no one knew why Casey had requested a sleepover in the middle of the week. They just knew that Casey didn't want to go home, but Casey wasn't upset that everyone had declined, and she hugged all of her friends goodbye before getting on the bus that would take her to the house she had lived in all her life on Grigor's Lane. According to a December 2003 article titled Caught in the Web by Kathy Fry, who wrote for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, I'm going to include a link to this article in the episode description, because Kathy wrote a four-part series based upon interviews and transcripts, and I got a ton of detailed information from her hard work. Like, she worked on this for months, and I was reading an article about her article, and she was saying, you know, she just really kind of never gave up. She spoke with Rick for several months before he agreed to sit down with her, and so they could really use this information to try and help people in the future. So anyway, my small rant is that I really think that you guys should read this, because there's a lot more information in her article. But according to this article, Rick hadn't been feeling the greatest that day before his shift, and he had considered calling off, but he thought, I can make it through, and he would have been off duty by 2 a.m. He called and spoke to Casey around 7 p.m., and she was practicing her saxophone, and then she finished all of her responsibilities and took a shower so that she could hop online. Her brother was at the school library, and Eric was at one of his night classes, and her aunt was at her daughter's sporting event. So she's chatting with Scott and telling him about her conversation with the school counselor and how people thought that Scott was an old rapist, and that the picture that he sent her was actually a picture of his grandson. And they're both just kind of like laughing it off. And, you know, they both decide that the counselor is going to likely talk to Casey about it again. And then they quickly move on. They start talking about things, the fact that it's their 2-month anniversary, just, you know, 13, 14-year-old internet couple stuff. Casey told Scott that she was selected as one of 23 students out of 130 to sing for the school board. And Scott replied with, "That's excellent, baby. I told you. You have the most beautiful voice I've ever heard." And I just thought that was really sweet, so I wanted to include that. Shortly after this, Scott asks Casey what she's doing, and she replies that she's eating and singing, and she was talking to Dave on the phone because they had just cried together over Dave's dying aunt. In Arkansas that night, it was rainy and cold. It was about 39 degrees, and Casey sent Scott a link to the weather website, and he did what any 14-year-old boy with his internet girlfriend would do. He described in asterisks how he would keep her warm. Taz2999, otherwise known as Scott, sent, "Are you okay?" And Model Behavior 63, this was Casey's screen name based upon her favorite Disney movie and her brother Austin's football jersey number, replied at 9:41 p.m., "Yeah." This was uncharacteristically short for her, and then there were no other responses to follow. So Scott started to become a little panicked. He sent message after message to Casey's computer, and he tried calling the home, but no one answered, so he sent an email to Jessica. Unfortunately, it was sent after 10 o'clock on a school night, so Jessica didn't see this email until the next day. Eric got back to the Woody home around 10:17 p.m., and he watched some TV and did some laundry, all the while assuming that Casey was already asleep in her bedroom. Around 11:30, he realizes that Casey is not in her room, and Tim comes home just a few minutes after. So Eric asks Tim, "Hey, like, where's Casey?" And Tim says, "She's in her room." And he says, "No, she's not." So Tim calls Rick and says, "Where's Casey?" And Rick says, "She's at home." And Tim says, "No, she's not." So Rick tells Tim to start calling Casey's friends and go check at Teresa's house. Rick notified the sheriff's office, and he takes off for home. And when he gets there, he immediately notices that Casey's new yellow coat and her band jacket are in the living room. Her shoes are next to the computer where they always were. But remember, it's 39 degrees outside and it's raining like crazy in the area. So she would have at least put shoes on if she was going to take off, and most likely a coat as well. and it was then that he spotted Casey's glasses. They were bent with one of the lenses popped out, and right then he instantly knew that someone had taken his daughter. He notices the recent call from Georgia, which had been Scott in his worry, and Eric starts messaging Taz 2999 sometime after 1 a.m. During this exchange, Scott tells Eric that Casey had been on the phone with Dave, and then he tells him, quote, "But don't worry about Dave. He is just a good friend. I would have said something if I didn't think he was a good guy, but he is cool." In the episode Web of Lies, it's called Age, Sex, Location, and that is because if any of you guys remember, when we were on the internet talking with strangers, we would always ask them ASL. So if you want to watch this episode, that's what it's called. It's explained that the authorities go to Scott's home in Alpharetta to verify that he is, in fact, who he says he is, and he is. His parents actually had no idea who Casey was previously, or that she was missing, or that their son even had a girlfriend on the internet who lived 8 hours away. In Casey's bedroom, law enforcement found some papers in her trash can where she had written that she loved David, Leslie, Fagan, and Scott G. Scott's parents had asked Kathy Fry not to report his last name. I do believe they say it in the Web of Lies episode. I'm not sure if it's changed, but I would assume that she wrote his full name. And what she did is she took all the letters from her heartfelt messages and assigned them all numbers and then tallied them up to determine who had the highest percentage of quote unquote true love. So the investigators are like, oh, okay, let's see if we can find Dave. Casey's friends had spoken with the school and law officials, and they both had believed Scott to be behind Casey's abduction. But the following day, after remembering the things that Dave had said over the last few months, they go back to the authorities and they tell them about Dave and his trip to Arkansas to visit his aunt. Law enforcement starts scouring hotels for anyone that might be checked in from California, anyone that might seem suspicious, or if they were lucky enough, using the name Dave or David or even initials DF. In Conway, Arkansas, a 1993 Buick Regal with California license plates was parked in front of a room at Motel 6. The manager confirmed David Fuller had checked in on December 2nd for a week's stay, did not want any maid service, and was highly pissed that the internet connection wasn't working in his room. At the Enterprise Rent-A-Car in Conway, investigators learned that Fuller had rented a silver Dodge Grand Caravan for a week, and on his paperwork was a cell phone number. This was the same number that was all over the Woody's phone records. Used to rent the van was Fuller's credit card, and his recent transactions showed investigators that he had rented a unit at the GuardSmart storage facility in Conway a month before Casey's disappearance. Officers race to the storage facility and find that the unit is unlocked. They raise the door and the van is inside, engine running. As soon as Conway Police Sergeant Jim Barrett gets a foot inside the door, David Fuller fires his gun. ...18-year-old David Leslie Fagan was 47-year-old David Leslie Fuller, confirmed by his California driver's license, and he was dead from a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. While sitting in the rented van, he smoked cigarette after cigarette, discarding the butts in the back where 13-year-old Casey Renee Woody lay, chained by her wrists and ankles to the four corners of the van floor where the seats had been removed. A bottle of chloroform and a rag was found near her head. Casey had been sexually assaulted and murdered, shot in the head. According to the medical examiner's report, it is very possible that Casey was unconscious during the last horrific hours of her life. Fuller, who had used a picture of a young boy with long sandy hair, in reality was a balding 47-year-old man whose second wife was in the process of divorcing him. He had two children, an 11-year-old boy and a 7-year-old girl at the time of Casey's murder. He had previously been in the Navy and most recently worked for a Saturn dealership, in which he was fired for suspected child pornography material on his work computer, but his boss said that it was because of his lack of productivity. He had been arrested for exposing himself to two young girls and was becoming increasingly hostile toward his wife. He was spending long periods of time walking around the neighborhood to talk on his cell phone and absolutely raged when his wife asked him to remove the computer from his bedroom. He had made his first trip to Arkansas in October 2002, and authorities believe that he may have been casing the Woody home, or possibly the source of the noises coming from inside the house that he told the girls they were just imagining. And in November, he bought a gun. 2 days after his gun purchase, he rented a room at the Motel 6. 2 days after that, he went to the storage facility and requested the largest unit that they had. 2 days after that, he extended his motel stay. It is believed that he was planning to abduct Casey at this time, but for whatever reason, he headed back to California. It was there that he purchased chain, duct tape, zip ties, and the chloroform. In a search of his apartment, they found framed pictures of Casey along with Sam, and on his home computer, they discovered his buddy list, which included several kids from Greenbrier. Fuller had been targeting other kids for about 2 years prior to Casey's abduction. In 2000, he offered to fly a girl from Michigan to California, but she declined and never gave him her phone number and had been communicating with him at the library on their public computers. He never got to learn her real name. In 2002, he sent flowers to a girl living in Texas he had been talking to since 2001. However, the girl said she never gave him her address. This stuck out to me because all throughout everything I read or watched, they never explained how Fuller got Casey's home address. It never expressly says that she gave it to him. We know that she gave it to Scott, but nothing really addresses how he got the address. I just assume he had her phone number. He had her name. It's not that hard to find somebody's address. But I just wanted to mention that here in case you guys had the same question, like, well, how did he know where she lived? And maybe she did give it to him and nobody knows. But anyway, these girls were lucky that he did not find their address. The one that he did find the address, he sent the flowers to, but her dad was furious, understandably so, and she didn't communicate with Dave ever again after that. During this time, he was posing as Dave Fagan, and he was using the screen name Dave's_IN. So when you look at it, it says Dave's N, and that creeped me all the way out, so I wanted to mention it. After a search of his DNA in the national database, they came up with zero hits on any other crimes, which was surprising to law enforcement because he was so thorough in planning this and obviously had been targeting other people, so they assumed that there would be something else, but they didn't find anything. In the spring of 2003, 100 patches were made in honor of Casey for the Innocent Images Task Force, who works to battle child predators. On the patch, a teddy bear is sitting next to a computer and the screen displays Casey Woody 1989 through 2002. Those on the task force wear the patches, and one was given to Rick. In sixth grade, Casey had written a poem that included the line, I'm an angel sent from above to spread the world with lots of love. Now on her headstone next to her mother's reads the line, I am an angel. Casey had been born with meconium aspiration syndrome and spent weeks in the neonatal intensive care unit, but after the first few months of her life, she never had any issues with her lungs again. She loved to sing, and her dad said that given the chance, she probably would have been a singer. She loved to write poetry, and she would give handwritten, heartfelt cards for birthdays, and she also loved band camp. Her friends share cute anecdotes about her life on the website caseywoody.homestead.com, which I will also include a link to in the show description, because on this site, you can learn about the Internet Predator Awareness Team that Rick and Casey's friends organized. There are links for internet safety. They also run a Facebook page, and they share tons of articles and tips for online activity safety, as well as other things that we tend to forget. Like if you have kids and you're writing their name and their address on things, or school property that you write stuff on, you know, it's easy for predators to find these kids with that information. So just a lot of things that are good to keep in the back of your mind. Again, I will link that site, but I'll say it again here just in case. It's Casey Woody, and Casey is spelled K-A-C-I-E, and Woody is W-O-O-D-Y. So it's caseywoody.homestead.com. And I think we are wrapping up just in time because my voice is on the very tail end of giving out because all these weeks later, it has not returned. So not only do I always apologize for the quality of this podcast, but now I'm apologizing for my raspy voice again. If you guys want to see some pictures of Casey, there are some really nice ones on that website that I mentioned, but I'll also throw a couple up on the Instagram, which is A Pine for True Crime. If you want to join the Patreon and help make this sound a little bit easier for your ears and also support a good cause, you can visit patreon.com/apinepod. And if you want to send me an email about anything, you can always do so at apinepodcast@gmail.com. And I believe about 70% of you now are on Apple devices. So if you have access to Apple Podcast and you want to throw out a review, that's always a very helpful way to show appreciation in a non-monetary way as well. So I appreciate anything, and I appreciate you just listening, not even doing anything that I've just mentioned, just listening, because thank you for sticking it out.